and I have some kind of inkling that the real relationship between good and evil is that the evil can be transformed, and it's not some kind of a primal principle, or at least each evil thing is not some primal, unchangeable entity, and this is just the sorts of things that I'm working on, that I felt like interjecting that transformation.
Well, I think it is. It's a good point. You put it very well. So I wouldn't differ with it.
Yeah. Isn't that why friends have gravitated to the image of darkness and light? Because there, to have light in the darkness, you can dissipate darkness with light without the thing being
taken. There also revelation. Sense of evolution, like I know that when I was younger, you know, like when got a great long white beard, I believe that. And then as we get older, wiser, the beard gets shorter. Maybe, you know, like there's no
God shaves then.
Right.
Yes. 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 And that would be in conformity with what I understand Friend's testimony. It's one of the central principles of Friend's testimony, progressive revelation, as it's sometimes called. There's not one revelation at a given time and then suddenly it stops. We're constantly seeking revelation, it seems to me, and sometimes finding it and sometimes not being aware of it.
I want to go off a little bit. I want to ask a specific question. How do you view Jesus in the Christ experience?
Well, I would say that if tomorrow, for example, it was proven beyond any doubt that there never was an historical person called Jesus of Nazareth living in Palestine at such and such a date, never was. It's completely demolished, all the historicity of Jesus. It would make no difference at all in my religious faith. Because I think the Christ notion implies the fact that we can be in communication with God. The Stoics had the notion that this world had been depotentiated, fallen away from God, but it was still connected by the logos, our reason, between this sphere in which we live and God. And what the Christians do, it seems to me, is to take over that old Stoic notion and suggest that Christ occupies this linking position between man and God, so to speak. Now, it's true, they also add the historicity of Jesus and so on, but I think it's the Christ of experience. Now, this is a good Quaker doctrine, if Quakers have any doctrine. It's the Christ of experience, so to speak, the revelation of God in man, which does occur at times, that is fundamental, and not the historic Jesus. I mean, the historic Jesus is important, perhaps, but not the central factor. Now, I would argue this is implicit in Quaker faith, although I know the historic Quakers would be shocked, many of them, if you said that the non-historic existence of Jesus would not make any difference. I suspect many of them would have hesitated, but it seems to me it's implicit in Quaker faith, at least. I'd be interested in what the rest of you think.
I found I just found that this idea of it's hard to relate to God and I don't know what God is, that it's easier for me to relate to the personality of Jesus mm-hmm. and not worry about what God is or isn't.
Well, I think that may be true. May be true.
I think it's also sort of an evolutionary thing that instead of vengeance, there's I think the message of Jesus is more of love, you know.
Mm-hmm. Than some conceptions of God, yes.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's
more
right.
than a vengeance. It's kind of an evolution on a human level.
The difficulty about talking about God at all, God talk, as some people call it, is that as soon as you begin to try to describe God's attributes, you begin to limit God. And I guess it's one of the reasons some of the ancient Hebrews always simply said the nameless one, so that you don't try to attribute any particular attributes to God, except that you recognize the awesomeness of God. I'm a theist in that respect, not a deist. The deist position has been that perhaps God got the universe started and then left it alone. You know, it went on its own. But I would suggest a theistic position that while God recognizes human freedom, and this is one of the big problems because humans make decisions which lead to disaster quite often, God recognizes human freedom. He or she is available for granting insights to human beings if we wait on God. I mean, this is, but he will not tell us what to do. He will not dictate to us. To assume this is to deny the possibility of human freedom, it seems to me. Now, this is good old orthodoxy. In the effort to overcome this dilemma, but I think it would be my belief. Plato has a myth that suggests, as he has myths for almost everything, there was a time, he says, in the age of Kronos, when the gods controlled us directly. There was a god for every tribe, so that there wasn't any problem of human decision at that point. And then the gods let go, and we enter the age of Zeus. In the age of Zeus, human beings no longer have gods shepherding them. They have to make their own decisions in the age of Zeus. Well, obviously the parallel is with the fall of man story in the Bible. But I think it represents a profound truth. God is concerned about human affairs, but he will not tell us what to do in specific cases. He'll give us a revelation of principles, so to speak, that we ought to follow. But we have to make the decisions as to how to apply those principles in specific situations. We have to exercise our freedom. It's a hard saying, of course, but the alternative would be to say that we're simply puppets.
Isn't one of the things in support of this, this thing of like near-death conversions or deathbed insight and so on, that when all hope is given up, the person finally falls on God?
Yes.
Then they seem to have a very opening experience.
They seem to, quite often, yes.
Perhaps we can take one more question. We've run a few minutes over our promised time. Yes, Les, you have not.
I'll ask a wild one. Man is a, first I'm going to discount the existence of an evil being, a devil. My own trigger thing. But why is a manipulative creature, man, who devises ways to destroy all living things on earth with his weapons or his waste, why would he be even the highest form of creation? Why couldn't it be a whale or a porpoise who lives within God's plan and uses the material involved wisely?
It could be. And this is one reason I suggested in my comments there must be many levels of creation, many of which are, quote, higher in terms of intellect, insight, intuitive ability, performance than human beings, probably. At least this to me makes more sense than the reverse. Now what those beings are, maybe they are dolphins, but then how do you get into the mind of a dolphin, for instance? I don't know. But we have to deal with ourselves as human beings and our relation to the universe, and this is our religious quest. By the way, I suggest, for example, that hens do not have a religious quest. They don't have a problem of religion, and the rat doesn't. In a sense, the rat's religion is the natural forces which govern his or her life. Human beings, however, in this indeterminate state, have to seek some holistic orientation to the world, and that's the religious quest, about which we're never completely certain.
Well, thank you, Malford. I certainly appreciate this.
I've appreciated it, too, the questions.
Yeah, if some of you wanted to grab Malford by the lapels in an informal session after we break, you're welcome to try.